When I was in seminary, I found myself most drawn to the question of evil. As a Unitarian Universalist, I felt that all people are good at heart, and that existence itself moves naturally toward good. Many of my other friends in seminary of other faiths were asking, how can it be that God is all-loving and all-powerful and all-good if bad things happen in the world? How can all those things be true at once? I found myself asking, if people are good at heart, if people are our hope for justice and peace, if existence is a story of moral progress, why are human beings the creators of violence and the cruelest suffering? Why is moral progress so exhaustingly difficult to bring about? And I decided to write my thesis on the question of evil from a Unitarian Universalist perspective. So I started spending hours in the library reading books upon books about why human nature is inherently twisted and bad. I read books upon books about how existence is a corrupt, lost cause. And my faith, the Unitarian Universalist way of thinking and feeling that had been passed down to me by others, started to grow cold and distant. Suddenly, these books seemed to have more truth than any experience I'd ever had. The words I spent my days reading were taking me by the hand and dragging me along, and I was not resisting or pausing to check in with my heart. It got pretty bad, and I realized at one point that I hadn't gone outside for 2 weeks because I could go to my classes, the library, and my apartment all without going outside. So finally, I decided to get out and attend an event on the other side of the city. This is New York City, by the way. So I made my way to the subway, and I arrived just as a train was coming in. So I hurried down the steps, hoping to squeeze in before the doors closed. And there was a man wearing a corduroy coat, holding the door open for me. And better still, he had a large leather bag that he was saving on one of the seats just inside the door, and it was like he was saving the seat for me, and as I walked in, he moved the bag and offered me the seat. And something inside me thawed a little bit. I almost started crying. I could feel the heat of tears in my throat and behind my eyes. But I just sat down and thanked him. Such a small, profound kindness. As we started moving, he didn't talk to me. He just stood nearby, and I had this odd feeling like he was protecting me somehow. Then as he reached his stop, he took a piece of paper out of his bag and handed it to me, and it was folded in half. It's this very paper. So I couldn't see what it said yet on it. Now, I've been living in New York City for 3 years at this point, and so I thought, oh great, he's going to be saying something inappropriate or trying to persuade me to his fanatic way of thinking, or he's asking for money. And I remember clearly that this was my first thought as I held this piece of paper. But I opened it, and to this day, it is one of my most valuable possessions. There's a poem written on it, but in the side here, it says, "Have a great moment," with a smiley face. And I began to cry then in earnest, and I felt my heart, mind, and soul continuing to thaw from all that lonely time in the library. Since it was New York City, nobody asked why I was crying or if I was okay. But it made it so I could have this beautiful private conversion experience there on the train, surrounded by people. Something beyond me was holding me and saying without words, without sound, that I was safe, I was home, I was alive. I was connected to the good in every being around me and to the eternal possibility that is existence. And here are the out-of-order excerpts from the poem that stood out in bold to me in that moment as I sat there reading it. It doesn't interest me where or what or with whom you have studied. I want to know what sustains you from the inside when all else falls away. I want to know if you have touched the center of your own sorrow, if you have been opened by life's betrayals, or have become shriveled and closed from fear of further pain. I want to know if you can see beauty, even when it's not pretty, every day, and if you can source your own life from its presence. I want to know if you can get up after the night of grief and despair, weary and bruised to the bone, and do what needs to be done to feed the children. While I was in seminary, there was this tiny Unitarian Universalist congregation on Long Island that actually met in a public library Sunday morning. And they allowed me to learn how to preach by going to them each Sunday and giving pretty terrible long sermons a lot of the time. And then they talked to me about it afterward. But after this experience, that Sunday, I went there and I preached about this experience. And I thought at that point that the stranger had written the poem. I didn't know it. So I preached about how this fully human angel had invited me to be more alive with him. I went on and on about all the things he'd invited me to rejoin and wake up to after a time of feeling deadened. And someone came up to me afterward and said, "I loved how you worked in the title of the poem without actually saying it." And I was like, "What? I didn't know this was a published poem." And they said, "Oh yeah, it's called The Invitation, and it's by Oriah Mountain Dreamer." I know it seems like a small coincidence, but for me, it was like a nudge from somewhere loving saying, yes, this had meaning. Yes. And I tell you this story this morning because it reminded me of how important intention is. As Anne Voskamp said, any dead fish can go with the flow. You have to be intentionally alive to swim against the current. Intentionally alive. Living on purpose is a choice, of course, because we're given life without asking for it. But what we do with our life is our choice. We can go through the motions or we can live like we mean it. If we are going to practice the Unitarian Universalist faith well, we have to live with intention. Because as you'll find in our seventh principle, we see existence as a web of interconnectedness. That means that our actions and our thoughts matter because they affect other people. They affect the earth. They affect the larger mystery and energy that holds it all together. The man I met on the train was living intentionally. I know this from his action, that he was paying attention to the many sources of creativity and wisdom and compassion that we have at our disposal. He had intentionally opened himself enough that those forces flowed through him, out of his fingertips, all the way through me. For this man, existence was not set in stone, but made out of clay. When I was alone in the library obsessing over my reading, the world around me felt hard and fixed, like clay that has gone cold. The human story and the story of moral progress was flat and dead and already written in permanent ink. The books I read made me feel like truth was created once and a long time ago, and all I could do was mourn a reality that I was unhappy with. But the man on the train used his thoughts and actions to warm the clay again and invited me to continue shaping it. The man on the train invited me to live intentionally as he was living. He invited me to get up in the morning ready to wrestle with my doubts and my frustrations. He invited me to notice beauty and compassion again, to put love before tasks and to-do lists. He invited me to live intentionally again. As we know, existence is not made out of stone, it's made out of clay. And that is why intention matters. If each of us continues trying again and again to live with intention, then this community will always be a place where our spirits are restored and our hearts are strengthened. If each of us tries again and again to live with intention, what happens inside these walls and beyond is ours to shape and mold into the form of human kindness, which goes on to shape and mold a more loving and fair existence. Blessed be. Amen.